Welcome inside the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast. My name is Trevor Sikkema, and I am here with Benjamin Solak. We are midway through previewing the AFC conference in the National Football League, going through each team's draft classes, talking about what we hated about it, because that's what we're about here, just hating on draft classes.
Just hatred.
If there's anything
I'm known for, it's just spite and slander.
I mean, people on Twitter would probably agree with you.
Well, that is Twitter. It's that is a place of spite and slander. Hatred lives there.
People probably think you're super negative on Twitter, but Ben's actually one of the most like positive people I know.
Am I super negative on Twitter?
No, I don't think that you're negative on Twitter, but that's just like how literally everything always comes off. It's just like everybody's super negative, right?
That's true. I have daily goals. I always have daily goals to send at least 2 positive tweets a day. But then like, yeah. Well, like no, 2 like very intentional positive tweets in the sense like I'm not talking about anything else. I'm just like being positive. But okay. The problem is then I think of a really funny joke that's usually at somebody else's expense and I have to like Ben, don't say this. And then I end up tweeting anyway because I think it's funny. And then it doesn't even do retweets. But in my head, I was like, that was really funny.
Yeah, but like that's probably why people follow you. Okay, so we are moving on. We've done the AFC East. We have done the AFC North. Now we're moving on to the AFC South. We are doing the AFC South today. We're starting with the Jacksonville Jaguars. This is a team that, Ben, speaking of jokes at other people's expense, I feel like the Jaguars have been a team for the last, like 10 years-ish that have been the butt of a lot of jokes. But then obviously you had the rise of the current defense and all the players that they got there and some of the success that they had. Certainly they had the playoff run. They had that little feud with Pittsburgh, which is very fun to go through. Ended up not making the Super Bowl, because of this one guy named Tom Brady. I know, weird. But they move on from Blake Bortles, who I think was truly the problem in Jacksonville. They were doing such a good job surrounding and making up for Bortles' mistakes. This draft, though, I thought it was going to go a different direction. Let's start at the very top because they end up winning the Josh Allen sweepstakes. And I know Tom Coughlin and how they want to set up the team and that edge rushing's king, pass rush, all this stuff. But I didn't really see them picking an edge rusher. Like, I thought this was going to be Jonah Williams here at the top of the draft. What did you think about the Allen pick? And did you expect them to take an edge rusher? Because I certainly did not.
Yeah, well, so we thought it was Juwan Taylor for a few weeks before. And then late, it was like, maybe it'll be Jonah Williams. We knew they did a lot of work on Juwan Taylor. And obviously, they end up with him at the top of round 2. So maybe that work was, A, are we okay with his knee health? And B, do we think he's going to be able to fall all the way to 38 or whatever it was, 35, where they selected him? Because if so, then you have the freedom to go somewhere else in round 1. But I did like them getting an edge. And this was a team that I had slotted for Brian Burns more than a few times.
Oh, okay.
I think that you have a lot of your big – remember, we're talking about Todd Walsh. We're talking about the Seattle 4-3. You have a lot of your big 5-techs. You have your Calais Campbell. You have your Taven Bryan, who apparently they're just going to move Taven Bryan full-time to 3-tech. He can't really be the big 5 that we talk about there. But – beyond Yannick Ngakoue, who's a stud, they don't have, a high caliber stand up outside edge rusher on the roster anymore. They wanted that to be Dante Fowler. Fowler is a good player, not necessarily a great player. And then obviously they end up moving him to Los Angeles when the Rams go to make their Super Bowl push. And so definitely like it made sense for me for this team to potentially take an edge rusher. And once Josh Allen fell, absolutely, I thought that Allen would be on the radar for them. And the selection to me makes a ton of sense because you want to have a guy you can pitch opposite Yannick Ngakoue, and Allen can be that guy for you for sure.
Yeah, I like it. I mean, like I like Allen as a prospect. And I mean, like I even like him as a fit in Jacksonville. I think that this pick makes a lot of sense. I just didn't see it coming. I thought that they were going to go O-line for sure. Like I said, I know that we talked about Juwan Taylor, and we'll get to him in a second, but I really thought that this was going to be Jonah Williams. I thought that he was kind of the perfect little plug-and-play guy there to put a right tackle, and then right. If you want him to move over to left tackle, I thought that made sense there. They end up getting Juwan at 35.
Right, which, if you thought you had a good chance at Juwan, then I think it makes a ton of sense pass on Jonah and get him.
I guess, but, man, I've talked about this a little bit this week, like having the right intel – on other teams, and like that allowing you to maybe navigate the draft a little bit better than you once would have thought. But
right.
I can't believe Juwan Taylor lasted to the top of the second round. It's just so hard. With teams coming O-line play as much as they do, how in the world did Taylor get to 35? Because what are they not like? It's something about his knee. I know that's the reason why he dropped, but I mean, if you're going to not take the guy, I don't know, man. It was just weird for me to watch all these teams at the end of the first round not take Juwan Taylor. It was really weird. And I think the Jaguars are going to get a steal in this guy. And so the Jaguars have one of my favorite drafts because of the two guys at the top.
Oh, absolutely. And that's the thing is, like, I would have loved for this team to continue drafting good players. They decided not to. Interesting strategy. But that those first two picks, they were, like, I thought, like, the strongest teams coming out of day one, day two were the Buffalo Bills, who we talked about on the last pod, the Jacksonville Jaguars, and the Washington Redskins. And then of those three teams, I think only the Redskins did a particularly good job on day three. The Jaguars, I thought, really rough on day three. But we're talking about a bona fide starter at the most important position on defense and edge, and a bona fide starter at the second most important position on offense, which is offensive tackle. Like, build through the trenches, and those are the most important trench spots, and they got two year one high impact starters. Like, with that, like, top 15 players, they got two of them. So, fantastic year one value. Obviously, you want, yes. Like, Allen's a guy who's got to develop a little bit. Taylor, yeah. I think, is a little bit more pro ready. But in terms of players who are going to contribute to 2019, you know, rookies really don't contribute as much to winning teams as we think they do. Usually rookies contribute a lot to just losing teams. But if the Jaguars are going to be a winning team with Nick Foles, I think they're still going to get big rookie contributions from those two guys, which is rare. It's not something you typically see, but that's how well the Jaguars did at the top of the draft. Obviously, big caveat here being Juwan Taylor being healthy, which we're assuming he is.
Okay, let's. I'll let you dunk now. I'll let you have the opportunity to do that because you said that they did not draft good players after the first two guys at the top. So when you say that they did not draft good players, which guys are you referencing that are not good?
Well, so obviously I think the pick, the Quincy Williams pick, I think threw everybody for a loop.
It's a brilliant pick. Brilliant pick in the long con because Quincy Williams,
I know you love it.
Quinn and Williams' brother, okay? You wait it out. You play the long game. You make Quincy happy, okay? You put him on special teams. You give him a little bit of depth work. You play him a lot during the preseason. You give him maybe some playing time if guys get hurt in front of him. Makes total sense. In 5 years, you got Quinn and Williams hitting the market. He's going to want to play with his brother. You already got the seed planted with Quincy. Now you're getting Quinn in. It's the long game, brother. Brilliant pick.
All right, so I have a couple issues with that. Number one, you spent a third-round pick on the long game, so that's tricky. Number two, and I can't say I've watched Quincy Williams' film, so I'm not positive that he's bad. But if your brother was Quinn and Williams, I'm positive teams spent time looking at you, at least like coming out of high school, and you went to Murray State. You know what I mean? So like,
What are you trying to say over here?
I'm just simply trying to say I don't think Quincy has a very strong NFL future.
Listen, he's bait.
Okay, but here's my other big issue.
The Jags basically picked Quinn and Williams in the third round.
Here's the problem with that.
Argue with it.
Here's the concern. Because Quinnen's a first rounder and Quincy's a third rounder, you have to sign Quincy to a second contract before Quinnen hits the market. So if Quincy's bait.
Pennies, brother. Listen, pennies.
But if I'm Quincy and I'm bait, then I'm like, listen, show me the quiche. Before I sign anything, big old contract. You're trying to get Quinnen over here. You want me to stay? Bring Quinnen into the fold. I need to see the money.
I like quiche. Quiche is good.
A little quiche, baby. Quiche is delicious.
Spinach and cheese quiche, you know?
Yeah, no, absolutely. My grandmother makes a mean one. But focus. Quincy, it's like, you know, like all right, if it's in the investment pick, whatever, how much you want to make fun of it. That was obviously the surprise of the first three rounds. Nobody saw that coming.
Sure, yeah.
You know, Minshew's not a guy who I think has a great pro projection.
Minshew's not good, so
if he sticks with your backup, great, that's a win. I do like Dontavius Russell a little bit in terms of what he can give you as a nose and as a one technique. I think he's a good depth player in the seventh round. I think he'll stick. Rekel Armstead, they just drafted all the bad parts of Leonard Fournette with none of the good parts. Which, like, if you really are as disenchanted with Leonard Fournette as it kind of sounds like you are, draft a back with some different ability. Like, if you look at their running
back. No, they want to stay parallel.
I mean, to me, like, if you look at that running back room right now with Leonard Fournette, Alfred Blue, Thomas Rawls, Rykel Armstead, like, find me the player who makes guys miss. Find me the player you want to throw a screen to right now. I can't find
Thomas
him.
Rawls.
Listen, I'll forever be a closet Thomas Rawls stan. Those colors will never bleed, baby. Thomas Rawls carried me to a fantasy championship, and I will love him till the cows come home.
That's what I'm saying, man. Free Thomas Rawls, you know? I'm a big free Thomas Rawls. All right, we got to move on. We got to go to – so I think you and I are pretty much I like the ending half of the Jaguars draft a lot more than you do. I think that it was a really solid draft overall, even looking at the first two picks and into the third round. I still thought they did a pretty good job. I like Josh Oliver. I like that pick.
I forgot to say Josh Oliver. I think it was early for him, but it's fine. Can I give the Jaguars a quick shout-out on the podcast, though?
Sure. Yeah.
The Jaguars signed DJ Alexander today. Do you know who DJ Alexander is, Trevor? Of course you don't. He's a backup special teams linebacker who does not matter whatsoever. But because the Eagles were one down pick in the comp pick formula, he's an undrafted free agent from Philly. Them signing DJ Alexander gives the Eagles a fourth round compensatory selection in the 2020 NFL draft. The Eagles have a third, a fourth, and a fourth in 2020 comp picks. It's a depth linebacker.
That's so dumb.
He probably won't even stick. Doesn't matter. Formulas finished being calculated later in May. We're good.
That's so dumb.
Fourth rounder. Shout out Tom Coughlin. I love you, baby. We got the third for Nick Foles. You're the man.
That's so dumb. Okay, Houston. Speaking of dumb, Houston Texans draft is up next.
This is so bad.
This draft is
so bad.
How do I say this appropriately? Not my favorite draft. Okay, let's just start. I'm just gonna run off all of them. Tytus Howard at 23. My God. My God. Lonnie Johnson at 54.
It still ain't pretty.
Max Sharping at 55.
Oh, it's ugly.
Cahale Waring at 86.
Okay, we're all right. We're doing okay.
We're fine there. Charles Omenihu at 161.
Imagine not only 160 players going before Charles Omenihu, but your team picking four players before Charles Omenihu, all of whom are worse than him.
Oh, boy. Xavier Crawford at 195, and then Colin Galaspia at 220.
12th man, baby.
The 12th man. Yes, that is what they call themselves, Texas A&M. Let's start at the top because Texans needed O-line something fierce, like something fierce. And with Juwan Taylor, with Cody Ford, with Dalton Risner on the board, they stuck their thumb straight into their butthole and took Tytus Howard at 23. Where did it all go so wrong, Ben?
It went wrong at 22, and the Eagles trade up to take Dillard. Eagles trade up in front of them to take Dillard.
Yeah, but you cannot panic that hard when the guy that you actually – because I fully believe that the Texans wanted Andre Dillard, right? Oh, I fully absolutely believe that they were going to take Dillard there at 23. But they got scared. They got outplayed by Howie. He jumps in front of them. He gets Dillard. You cannot panic this damn hard. You can't, because Tytus Howard pick is a panic pick. How in the world did you not pick Juwan Taylor, Dalton Risner, Cody Ford, whatever? Tytus Howard should have gotten picked in the third or fourth round as a developmental, maybe high upside guy with a lot of tools. Instead, not only did you pick this guy in the first round, he's got to start. Like, this dude's got to play right away.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what the transition is from Alabama State to the NFL, but it can't be that. It's got to be pretty steep.
Yeah, I mean, and for a player like Tytus Howard, it's pretty significant. We were ripping on this pick a little bit on BGN Radio on the Kiss and Solak show, and we brought the point that the Eagles have Jeff Stoutland, who has like two decades coaching offensive lines on like college level and then the pro level, and he's developed a ton of guys, and it's great. And the Texas offensive line coach, Mike Devlin, has been coaching for like 4 years and was like never coached at the college level. And it's just like, not only did Howard go in the first round, like in terms of a place to develop, he's got
this ain't
yeah. it. And
this ain't
this
it.
This is a poster child example. This is the prototype example for why you don't box yourself into need in the early rounds. You have to do it.
Yeah, but even if they would have, it would have been fine.
Right, but
pick Cody 4-23, then trade your 2 second round picks up and go get Dalton Reisner. Okay, there you go. Draft's over. Have a nice day. Right. Deshaun Watson's not going to die.
But even, right, so even like, let's say they go ahead and they pick, you know, Cody Ford, right? Even then, once you pretty much force yourself in terms of a roster management perspective to draft an offensive tackle, you're taking the wealth of players that you can draft, say of 16 first round grades, where you're now making, if you have to go offensive tackle or corner, like they could have gone offensive tackle or corner, you've now got like 4 players max that you're looking at your pick. It handicaps right. you. And then if you're not going to be willing to move up, move around, and get aggressive, which they clearly weren't because they knew Dillard was falling as well as anybody else did, well, shucks, team. I mean, what are you – you're just sitting there hoping the board – you're just hoping the board falls your way, and it ain't coming to you. You know, like, so it's the lack of aggressive roster – the lack of aggressiveness and free agency to manage the roster, and then the lack of aggressiveness on draft day to move up and get a guy – and then you're stuck there saying, all right, well, we're going to take Titus Howard. I have a guy I do his Texans radio show sometime, and he texted me immediately after the draft, and he was like, wow, you really didn't like the Texans draft class. And I was like, I kind of really looked at it long term, and I was like, yeah, it's not my favorite. He goes, yeah, they drafted your 14th and 15th overall tackle and your 16th overall corner. And I was like, what? Like, I didn't realize how these first 3 picks are just bad. Off the Jeez. Wall. And it was bad. It was a first, a second, and a second. They had a first and 2 seconds.
It's bad. They blew it. They blew it. And there's no other way around.
And it's so interesting
Texas had one job in this draft. Right. One job.
It's so interesting.
Go draft offensive linemen. And they did. You know what, Ben? They did that.
It's in
the literal worst way they could.
It's really interesting to me because sometimes you look at these as some classes. Like I'm like looking at the sheets right now. I can see the Jets, right? Jets drafted from Alabama, Florida, USC, WVU, Minnesota, Rutgers, all Power 5, right? You go to the Broncos, Iowa, Kansas State, Missouri, Ohio State, Oregon, Colorado, all Power 5. The Texans got Alabama State, Northern Illinois, San Diego State, Central Michigan. Like, there is a lot of trust in the building for their coaching staff's ability to develop these players. These players who – lower levels of production, like you look at a Titus Howard, you look at a Kahale Warring. These are players who are in need of multiple years. Even you say Lonnie Johnson out of Kentucky, like even though he's Power 5, like Johnson's in need of multiple years of seasoning to become what he could potentially hit in terms of his ceiling. So like this draft to me is just like, we think our coaching staff can do literally anything, which, I mean, go off king. Like if that's how you want to approach it, that's how you want to approach it. But there are pro-ready players that you can go get, and it makes life so much easier if you just draft the pro-ready guys.
Yeah, moment of silence for Deshaun Watson.
Dude.
Because he's going to die.
Like, it's going to be a what-if podcast in 20 years. You know,
what if Deshaun Watson didn't die in 2019?
Yeah, we're all going to be the Mars shuttle going out for vacation, listening to Bill Simmons is being kept alive by, like, some sort of weird technology. It's gonna be like, what if the Texans have protected Deshaun Watson even once? You know what I mean? Like, we'll always wonder about what his career could have been if they just can't get a functioning offensive line. They started 7 different iterations of the offensive line in front of him last year, and they addressed it by signing Matt Khalil. We forget that. Signing Matt Khalil.
People often forget, but not us. Not us.
I think Titus Howard and Max Sharping. This is negligence. He should be able to sue for reckless endangerment.
You really should be. Let's move on to the Tennessee Titans because their draft is a lot better than the Houston Texans draft.
One of my favorite classes.
Being negative. So, like, I didn't think that as I was preparing for the show a little bit here, I was like, oh, you know, the Tennessee Titans, let me see their draft class. I didn't remember their draft class very much, like, off the top of my head because I guess I wasn't focusing it on draft night. I really like this draft. Like, you a lot, okay?
You want to know why, in my opinion, we don't remember it? Like, because I didn't realize either how much I liked it. It's because they drafted all the guys at the spots that, like, we think they would have potentially gone. And, like, I think they got, like, really nice value in, like, Amani Hooker and DeAndre Walker. They didn't have that, like, one or two, like, big steals, like Juwan Taylor, like 35. We were like, wow, he fell.
Right.
They just, like, this is the only team that did not reach against my board once. Every pick they made, like, you know, mid-first round, mid-second round, mid-third round, mid-fourth. Well, I don't go to mids after, on day three, but, like, Simmons, I had as like early one, they got a mid one. AJ Brown, I had him as mid two, they got a mid two. Nate Davis had him as mid three, they got a mid three. Right? Like, they did not reach for value once. Only team against my board with all six of their picks. So this is just, like, to me, just flawless execution. Flawless.
You trying to tell us that you were in the war room?
No. I mean, like, Mike Vrabel can hit me up anytime, and if I knew the name of the Tennessee general manager, I'd also claim that he talked to me, but I don't. So
John Robinson, you uncultured swine.
John
so
Robinson,
let's
with no age.
Let's list off this draft that they had. Okay, they got Jeffrey Simmons at the top, AJ Brown, Nate Davis, Amani Hooker, DeAndre Walker, David Long. I like all those players. I mean, I really do. So I thought that, like you said, I think across the board, top to bottom, was really solid. Getting Simmons at 19, it's interesting because I thought that this was certainly earlier than I believed Simmons was going to go. Like, I thought he was going to be more in the, say, the 26 range, like where the Colts were picking. I thought he had a chance, and actually a pretty good chance when draft weekend rolled around, to be a late first round pick for a team to get that extra fifth year on his contract. I always thought that that was kind of the swaying point of why it might happen with Simmons, but I didn't think he was going to go 19. So good on Tennessee for going to get their guy. AJ Brown in the second round, I think, is really good as well. Amani Hooker in the fourth, I'm a big fan of. I thought Hooker should have been a day two pick, actually. Mm-hmm. DeAndre Walker is really interesting to me because he gives you the same kind of flash I think Harold Landry does. Harold Landry's better, don't get me wrong, but I watched some DeAndre Walker games and he was hot and cold, so it worries me a little bit, but I mean, like, I like what I saw from him. So the times in which he was out there and he was doing a lot of pass rush things, I was a big fan of it. So I like this class overall, man. I really do.
This is a DeAndre Walker stan account over here. Big fan. I think, like, it's the first Georgia edge rusher I've actually liked. Like, I didn't like Leonard Floyd that much. I didn't like Lorenzo Carter that much.
Well, Leonard Floyd was more of a linebacker.
Well, that's the thing is, like, Floyd, Lorenzo Carter, and DeAndre Walker, all three of them, Georgia moves them around and sugars them into the A-gap, and I think it messes up with their stance and it messes up their outside edge rushing stuff. But I think Walker – Walker's got some really nice flashes. Yeah, Hooker, I think it was lead draft analyst for PFF Mike Renner, who we had on during the extra mock, who said, like, not only is Hooker falling surprising, it's, like, tough to figure out why. Like, he had good testing, good production, good film. Like, what – and he's a great dude. Like, where – like, I can't circle the issue here. And it's funny because I remember when Hooker came out, I was talking with an agent who I know in the area who was like, nobody had any idea this kid was even thinking about declaring. So the only thing I can think of in terms of the NFL is they just, like, feel like they didn't do enough work on him in the season. I don't know. Like, they didn't have enough time. Mm-hmm. Just, but, like, nobody had any clue that this junior, who I think started for, like, a season and a half or whatever it was going to be coming out. And so that's, like, you know, obviously I think, like, that NFL teams have their process, and maybe they didn't get as much a Hooker in the process as they like. But, I mean, the safety room right now in Tennessee is Byard, Vaccaro,
Stud,
Hooker, and somebody else who's good. Dane Cruikshank, the Arizona kid who they got in the day three last year. Like, the youth and talent there is tremendous. I still have some concerns about corner in the long term. I don't know if, like –
yeah, but they already got their guys on there, so it's just, like, they got to praise.
Right, exactly. Like, I don't – like, so they've got Logan Ryan, I think, is on a contract year. And then it's Malcolm Butler, who, like, I don't know if I'm sold on Malcolm Butler, so that's my only concern. But I floated this out there. Like, it's year two for Vrabel, which obviously Tennessee had a productive season in 2018. You know, they go ahead, they miss the playoffs by a game. They lose to the Colts, I think, in week 17. They miss out on the playoffs. But it's year four for Mariota. And so if you – year four, year five. Might be year five. It's year five for Mariota. Yeah,
yeah, it's 50, year five, yeah, for Mariota.
Year five for Jameis. It's year five for Mariota.
Correct.
Obviously, there's a health question mark, but if Mariota and Vrabel can't start doing something with this roster, I mean, like, this team can't just keep sticking around at 500. You know what I mean? Like people, Titans fans got mad at me because I like floated out the like Vrabel, but I didn't love Vrabel as a head coaching hire. I didn't see him make a ton of changes to what was a middling team in his first year. So like, I want to see something in year two that makes me excited about this, because if not, like the Titans are one of those sneaky teams that's like a candidate for a blow up and a rebuild if they're not willing to pay Mariota the second contract.
Yeah, it's fair.
No, so they're in a really interesting year, one of the most interesting teams to watch, in my opinion.
I think no question about it. For a lot of the reasons that you said, the Titans are a very interesting team. Let's wrap up with the Indianapolis Colts. Chris Ballard doing the most predictable Chris Ballard thing he could do and trading back from 26, not having a first round pick, but they got a lot of dudes, right? I mean, Rockison, Ben Banigou, Paris Campbell, Bobby Okereke, Kari Willis, Marvell Tell. They got a lot of players. Now, the names at the top I like a lot more than some of the later names that I just started rattling off. But I think at the top, even getting Rockison where they did at the top of the second round makes a lot of sense, especially looking at their cornerback class. Getting Ben Banigou late in the second round as well. I think a developmental pass rusher. Paris Campbell, if you ask me, is the biggest get for this Colts draft class, because I think Paris Campbell gives them an element in their offense that they have been searching for a long time. I think the tight end piece with Eric Ebron was another one that they were missing that kind of came to fruition last year. But they have been looking to complement T.Y. Hilton for so long, and I think that they have not brought the right guys in to do that. I think Paris Campbell is the perfect guy to do that, because T.Y. is still going to be the main guy of emphasis. They're still going to have him going deep down the field. They're still going to take their shots. But until this point, T.Y. has been one of the most effective deep ball receivers in the NFL over the last couple of years. But there's never been that guy underneath who is also, I don't want to say as like equal, because T.Y. is incredible, but you know what I'm saying? Like, at least in the ballpark of a threat like T.Y. is, to say, hey, you can't just sell out for this guy going deep, because we've got a guy underneath who, if we get the ball into his hands in space and you're not accounting for him, Paris Campbell is going to be able to tear it up and take it to the house. So I really, really, that was my favorite pick of the Colts draft. I thought a lot of it was honestly pretty predictable of what Chris Ballard often does in his draft classes. I think this is a pretty standard Chris Ballard Indianapolis Colts draft, as we've come to recognize over the last couple of years. But I will say that I will stake my claim on the Paris Campbell, his value to this offense being what it is, and his role.
Yeah, so I'm not – like, it was funny because I didn't realize how many people really loved this class, and I honestly think – the support for this class is a bit of Ballard trading on the name of having a really good just 2018 cycle as a general manager. And like, I don't know, it's tough being being the general manager du jour is like hard, or I should say it's easy. Staying there is hard. And like, I think that, like, you know, you go through cycles of hitting and missing. And so with, like, when it comes to like a Yasin player, like, I'm not nearly as high as Yasin as the consensus. I get why the Colts liked him, because they're going to let him be able to play physical at the line of scrimmage, and they're going to protect him with two highs. That's the way they like to do things. But to me, like, I think Yasin is overdrafted. I do acknowledge the need, but like, a lot of other good corners were there. I look at a guy like Ben Banigou going top 50, and I understand the fit, and I get why he's going to make sense for the team. And him and Kamoko Touré pitching opposite sides, I think that's really exciting. That's a lot of explosiveness. It's a lot of bend. But there were better guys that I like better at edge. You know what I mean? So those first two picks for me are just guys who I value lower than the consensus. And so it's tough for me to get as excited about this Colts team. To me, and I hear the Paris Campbell thing, I don't disagree with it whatsoever. Knowing Frank Reich from his time in Philly, like, he's going to get Campbell the football very, very similarly to how Ohio State gave him. Like, a big concern for Campbell coming out was his depth of target. Well, I mean, Frank Reich's just going to feed him mesh and sit routes. Like he did it in Philly, and he's going to do it here.
Yes.
Bobby Okereke is so exciting to me, because you have Darius Leonard in place with 34 and an eighth inch arms, whatever the heck it is. Bobby Okereke brings the same length. He doesn't bring exactly the same instinct and coverage that we saw from Leonard in the Colts. But when he was at South Carolina State, I didn't see that on film either. And so if the Colts can get Leonard and Okereke at the same time on the field dropping into zones, the amount of length and explosiveness there is exciting. And like, this type that the Colts are going after with this super long explosive linebacker is really, really interesting. because of how frequently you're dropping linebackers into underneath zones. Like, even the Tarleton kid, EJ Speed, right? They bring in this guy in the fifth round that nobody's heard of. Well, he's a wide receiver convert to linebacker who's like 6'4 with vines. Like, they're just bringing in these huge, long spider monkey bodies of linebacker. And I think it's really, really exciting. Yeah. So if you get a couple of them on the field, you shut those intermediate windows because you have the ability to disrupt those pass lanes. I think that's super cool. So I love the approach they took with that. Jerry Green's even another guy. He's like half edge, half linebacker. They love these long defenders. And I love seeing how that's going to continue to work out for them over the next couple seasons.
All right, there it is. Our recap of the AFC South. We went through all four teams there, gave you our thoughts, which leaves us with just one AFC division left. It is the AFC West. That is coming tomorrow, so stick around for that, guys. And until then, you keep it locked right here on Locked On NFL Draft.